Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Ask yourself what you want out of your building and out of your house. Forget all about what you think you've learned so far and start with this clean slate. Forget the market forces. Understand it's art that you're asking for, and then dive in and trust the process. And so that can be applied to any space, whatever it might be. When you ask these questions, this is the same questions, again, not to make this an infomercial for Entree Architect, but that's the same question the network asks of us as professionals to do for our business. Ask the same question. Don't take the status quo, but look at what you're doing, what you want out of it, what your vision is, what you're dreaming of, and then make everything work towards that goal and start from scratch. And don't just sort of result to the bottom drawer. Okay, we got a plan for that. Here it is. Next one. No good comes from that.
Welcome to our relaunch of Context and Clarity Live, the place where authors, experts, and thought leaders come to have engaged conversations with entrepreneurial architects just like you. I'm Jeff Eccles, and every Tuesday afternoon on Context and Clarity Live, my new co-host, Katie Kangas, and I, and our live audiences that join us from all across the internet, we have a conversation with a special guest to search for clarity around the things that matter most to you, the architect, no matter what your context is. In this episode, we talk with Toby Vitt. Toby is an architect based in Charlotte, North Carolina. His YouTube video series is called Monday Morning Mischief, and now he's the author of the award-winning Supersizing Bliss, How We Have Betrayed Our Homes and the Happiness We Seek. All right. Well, welcome back to Context and Clarity Live. It's a brand new day. It's a brand new time. It's a brand new look, and it's a brand new co-host. So thank you for joining us here Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern. It's going to take me probably a year and a half to remember that. but welcome to Context and Clarity Live, and a special welcome to Katie Kangas. Welcome.
Hi.
Glad that you are here as our new co-host, joining us all the way from Minnesota, right?
Correct. I'm just north of the Twin Cities.
Okay. And so what do you do? What do you do in north of the Twin Cities in Minnesota?
Well, I've got, Katie Kangas, long A's. I started my own firm 3 years ago and focus on historic preservation and do a little residential on the side. But I've had the delight of working on a historic house that became a museum, the largest archive of a local historical society. And that was very fun. But also on the side, I've been an Entree Architect fan for 10 years. Like, just following everything. Love learning about business. Love talking to people about how they practice architecture and helping people find their best practice.
Awesome. Love it. And some of you are familiar with the Context and Clarity Classroom. And Katie has been a regular in the Context and Clarity Classroom, and that's been a lot of fun. We've talked about a lot of great topics, business topics, of course, because it's Entree Architect. And so it's great to make this connection and welcome you as our new co-host in this relaunch of Context and Clarity Live. So glad that you're here.
Well, and I'm really excited to talk with Toby today because Supersizing Bliss sounds like a terrific read, and it sounds like he's got a pretty comprehensive practice to go along with it.
He does. And the two of you were talking backstage before we got started. And so we've got to revisit that conversation because I think there's going to be there's a nice little tie in there. And I think there's going to be a lot of interest in what the two of you are talking about too. So some of you have already know who is in the green room right now. So why don't I just introduce him? Our guest today is an architect and he's a mischief maker. You're going to need to go over to YouTube to figure, or you can find it on Instagram and TikTok as well, but go over to YouTube and figure out why he is a mischief maker. We'll talk more about that. He designs modern and energy efficient homes that are meant to bring happiness to their inhabitants. He's also the author of Supersizing Bliss, How We Have Betrayed Our Homes and the Happiness That We Seek. Toby Witt, welcome to Context and Clarity Live.
Well, thank you so much for having me. What a great intro.
it's all about you. So I'm sure I butchered your name. Can you tell us who you are?
Yeah, no, that's pretty good. Well, I go by Toby simply because, you know, I'm from Germany originally. And so Tobias is actually my real name, but I couldn't handle the American pronunciation. So I went with Toby. So my last name is fair game. It's technically Witte, but, you know, you can whichever way is fine.
Yeah. So and so the name of your firm is?
Yeah, it's Witte Haus. With the house being the German spelling, all smart. And yeah, when I started it, somebody had told me, had said, hey, Toby, you should really market sort of you and your Germanness as part of what you bring to the table. And so the URL wasn't taken. So I took it and made it in the business name.
Nice. It, yeah, I love it. And I love the branding. And so if you're not familiar, you need to go to Toby's website and go to his, what does it say on the website? Does it say swag or is it?
Yeah.
Swag. Yeah. Yeah. So you can order a Witte Haus t-shirt, which I should have worn that today, but get your Witte Haus t-shirt today.
Yes. And if you have a baby, we even have a onesie for you.
Nice. Nice. I love that. I love it. Well, so first of all, congratulations. You published Supersizing Bliss. Tell us about Supersizing Bliss, you know, and the whole subtitle and everything. Why did you want to write this book with that title? What was the inspiration for it?
Yeah. I would say that I had, I guess, just one too many conversations with prospective clients where the conversation would focus on pieces of the puzzle that just didn't seem that important to me. And, you know, a lot of times it's the square feet, cost per square foot, all kind of metrics that just don't mean much to anybody really when you get down to it. And, you know, in these conversations, you have a minute to kind of try to change the sort of tone of the entire conversation. And for me, what I was thinking was that really I need to shift this conversation and start from a different foot. And if I just had a book that I could hand to my clients and say, hey, read this first, and then we can talk if you're still interested, then we would have an entirely sort of different conversation. And what my point is that if you go into creating a custom home for yourself, it's a lot of investment of time, money, just good mojo that has to go into it. And you do it probably once in a lifetime. You're going to do it so that you're going to feel good once you live in there. It has to be a stage for your life. It has to be there to make you feel better about yourself, about your life. And it has to be a trusting partner in this whole affair. And that's what the power is in good design. It's just to bring all that to the table. And so if I can say, hey, let's not talk about supersizing square feet, but let's talk about supersizing the bliss, then we should be in a better place. So, yeah.
I love that. How are people receiving the book, receiving the idea?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, it has been only a few weeks or so since it has been sort of out and available. But I have already one prospective client on my blog post or answering on the blog post about the book and saying roughly something along the line that, oh my God, the only bad thing about the book is that I can't put it down. And I want my architect to say exactly these things. This is what I'm thinking about. And so I was just like, I mean, that's right there. That was worth the whole endeavor just to hear that. Yeah. So I think it's doing its job already. During the writing process, which was, I don't know, a year and a half or something, the entire process, I kept thinking I would have prospective client meetings and I would think, oh my God, if I just had my book already, because that's what I was trying to tell you here, but you know, it's a couple of chapters worth, so I guess wait a year. But you know, just showed me that I was on the right track with it.
I love the fact that really the ideas are generated from your experience working with clients, and now you're packaging it up and giving it back to them in the you know, in this form of a gift, and the focus on bringing happiness back into the home, I think probably as a result, but probably also as part of the process.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me how, and that's one half of the title, I guess, is how badly we have done in creating homes for ourselves. And letting the sort of unbridled marketplace go rampant and provide mass-produced housing that is just awful. I mean, nobody should live in the houses we live in. So I forgot where I was going with this. But happiness. So yeah, the happiness part is it's sort of a no-brainer, if you will. When the pandemic hit, it turned out that nobody liked living in their houses. They suddenly, you know, everybody was suddenly forced to live at home, and it sucked. Pardon my French, but it was just awful. Nobody liked it. Suddenly everybody had to add on to their house and build pools and whatnot. And it was just ridiculous. And it was just a testimony to that, you know, our homes are basically good enough to sort of come home, watch Netflix, drink yourself to a stupor and hope you wake up the next day. It's just no good. And we just could lie about it. And so I think that the pandemic really showed us, no, I'm not happy in the house that I live in. And there should be a better way to do this. And that's what the house should be. We spend so much time in our homes that define how we greet the day, how we think about ourselves, and we have to.
I host a morning conversation, just a half hour every morning, and both Katie and Toby are regulars there. But it's all about mindfulness and mindset. And you know, as you were saying that, I thought, yeah, I mean, we talk a lot in these. It's called Java with Jeff. It's our morning mindset conversation, but we talk a lot in those conversations about being present. And I think that's something that we again, maybe it's just me, but I think a lot of us, we're just not, you know, we're not focused on the moment. We're not focused on the meaning. We're not focused on the feeling of right now and being here. And, that whole series of conversations have been quite eye-opening to me, because number one, I'm not qualified to host those conversations. I just learn enough to stay ahead of the conversation, but I completely understand where you're coming from there, right? It's, you know, the idea that, oh, well, square footage or cost per square foot or whatever, that doesn't translate into anything that actually has anything to do with my life or my experience or the moment that I'm in right now. So I'm glad you've written this.
Yeah. And it's, when you say that, it's really, so much comes to mind for me. So the, you know, one of the sort of pieces of the conversations you have is about, having sort of mindfulness practices, right? And mm-hmm. So, I don't know, some people meditate, other people pray, whatever it might be, but it's exactly sort of what you're describing there, where you can kind of find a pause and reflect and just calm things down for a moment. And, even though you're kind of trying to just let go of everything, including your surrounding, I think that, I mean, we are, I know that most of us here on the call today are architects. We are just made to to create spaces where that is so easy. I mean, we have the tools in our bag to create spaces that just ask you, that just already puts you in a different state where you can calm down, where you can focus, where things can just ease up. My favorite stories is I have been lucky enough to design and build a home for my family and I, and we moved in six years ago, and it still feels like we are on vacation. I mean, we walked in, my family couldn't wipe their smiles off their face for weeks, and we walk in here and all the stress we bring home from work and whatnot, it just walks away. It just falls away. It's literally because, we created a stage where we can just relax and feel good and be appreciated, and where this space, this environment sort of talks to us and makes us just feel at ease. And I mean, it's incredible that we have these skills to create that. We have the toolbox, and nothing should hold us back to do so.
Yeah.
So for everybody else out there who's listening to this, hire an architect if you do your home, because, they know how to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned Mischief Maker earlier, because that's one of my, and you've been doing this for a while, but it's one of my favorite things. I'll be scrolling through Instagram and I run across a Monday morning mischief. And I love those. First of all, starting with this idea of Monday morning mischief, but you're explaining all the aspects of design and living. Can you tell us more about that series that you? And yeah. By the way, if you haven't seen it, it's a very high quality video series that Toby produces there. But tell us more about Monday morning mischief.
Yeah, it's the book kind of started with that series in some ways. I just did exactly. So every Monday morning, and now it's every other week. I essentially, it's like a 2-3-4 minute short video where I just take one question of my clients or one thing that I'm working on or dealing with that I think is interesting for my clients to hear about, to just make it a fun little story behind it and share it. And one of the comments on the book, it's the director of an architecture school. He said that my book was sort of a love letter to architecture for people that are not for non-architects. And so I really loved that because the Monday Morning Mischief series was really me trying to figure out how to talk to my clients. What do they want to hear? And it's difficult. And Jeff, you at one point shared a story about a brewery closing shop close by you, and it was interesting for me because it was, and you asked the question, what's the value of a $7 beer? You can go to the supermarket and buy a six pack with it, same price. And it was so easy for me to answer that question, right? It's like, well, so you have, I can imagine just the brewmaster who's all about the perfect beer and the taste and the ingredients and all that good stuff. And then you have the people who really want to go there because they get to have their whatever, Wednesday get-togethers, their run club meetings, what have you. There's a place to congregate, all of these things. The beer has to be good. If it's bad beer, they won't come. But that's not important, right? That just creates sort of the atmosphere for everybody to do what else they want to do. And for me to sort of think, oh, I have a million ideas about what the brewery should do to kind of market themselves and help out and help, sort of meet the brewmaster with his clients or her clients with their clients, that was easy for me to see. In my own business, it's so difficult. And so with the Monday Morning Mischief series, I was trying to sort of like get out of my brewmaster, thing and sort of, okay, let me just sort of answer the questions you ask me, talk about the things that are interesting to me that I love to talk about in a way that I hope you might find interesting. So we can talk about something that you want to talk about. And then sort of the book just grew out of it. Sorry for the long monologue, but little video clip that got great sort of views is about me making the point that you can buy a school bus for literally the same price as a Maserati. And so the square foot price is so much better for the school bus. And so Are you seriously walking into a car lot of a, you know, luxury car brand and say, sell me a school bus? Because that's what my clients used to do to me. They come in here and ask for a school bus. And for the it costs the same price. You can buy a school bus or you can buy as a Maserati, and you want to just drive down to the beach and have a good time, and you asking for the school bus makes no sense. And so that was just one of those kind of stories that I have fun with, and you know, the book kind of grew out of all of that.
I love it. Can you talk a little bit about the timeline of when you started collecting your musings and when it started to become, okay, this is more than just a writing, this is something I can do with video? And then when did that, like, oh, this can become a book? Because that's a fascinating progression of content creation.
Yeah, I'm sure Jeff and Mark and the whole Entree Architect community is at fault.
The blame.
Exactly. It's not my fault. So, I don't know. Just, you know, it was part of the, I don't know, it was just a natural progression where these things were just piling up. And I think the format wasn't necessarily always the right one, I felt like, where I thought, there's so much stuff here. I'm just pushing one thought, but it really, you know, in a book, you have all of these thoughts sitting there and you get to just open, read half a chapter, a couple sentences and put it away, but it's still, you know, beckons you and okay, let me read another page or something. And so it has a longer shelf life and maybe kind of germinates in different ways. And it just, you know, felt like the right progression. However, I did take some writings, blog posts and the video stuff and whatnot and said, well, let's put it together and start writing a book. Turns out it's not a whole lot and you have to fill a lot of pages. And then I was sitting there and going, okay, so what do we do? And in the process, wow, I learned a lot. It was incredible. I mean, I was just blown away with sort of these half notions and ideas that were sort of percolating that had no substance, that I now got to sit down and say, okay, so what is the story behind it? The funniest thing is the very first chapter I wrote, I sat down and I realized, and started just writing sort of an introduction to my thoughts. And I'm literally writing, to build and design single family homes is ridiculous. Makes no sense. They're just wrong. We shouldn't do this. And I was like, great. So my entire business is kaput. There we go. This is it. Stop writing. Stop working. Doesn't make any sense. And so just like that, the entire book just had all of these surprises for me that had an immediate effect on how I work and how I show up and how I think about my business, all of that. I almost think that we should be told, okay, before you start a business, write a book so you can kind of clarify what you're actually talking about, then start.
Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
I feel like there's a lot of things that we start backwards.
Yeah. That's pretty fascinating. You know, the more we talk about, you know, all the different aspects of the business of architecture, you know, here in the Entree Architect community, and we're rolling out a masterclass next week that's going to introduce the ArcOS, the Architecture Operating System. The very first facet of that is planning, and so we'll have this this masterclass from I'll have to remember the name as I go, but from overwhelmed to operational, that's not it. But I think that's a fascinating idea. If you sat down and you wrote the book, you would jump ahead, I think, 15 spaces on the board game, right? Because it would force you to think through a lot of the things that many of us oh, you know, I'll figure that out as I go, or I'll figure that out, you know, down the road somewhere, or I have no idea what it is that I don't know, which is a lot of us, from overwhelmed to optimized. Thanks, Mark. That's the masterclass that starts next week. So I love that idea. Maybe we'll do that as a masterclass. Everybody write a book this week. You figure out your business.
Yeah, definitely. What was I just going to say? Like one of the craziest things I read was, wrote it in the book, is that, don't quote me on the exact numbers, but I think like 75% of all construction happens in the suburbs, and only 2% of all build work includes an architect. That was mind blowing to me. It was a Harvard study that figured that out. That was just mind blowing to me. And the kind of effect that had on my business planning, you know, was incredible. Just to realize, just to look at that, sort of take that in. There were fascinating, pulling this out of my head here, but there were some fascinating numbers, census numbers I dove in for a minute and found out and realized that sort of there is our living arrangements are so faceted and so complex and different and varied, and it changed over the years. And that sort of this single family home, I don't know, three bedrooms, a living room, a kitchen, dining room, and all of that cannot be a fit to all of these people in their different ways of living. And yet that is sort of what we still kind of carry around with us. People come and say, okay, I guess I want a house. That's what it should offer. And it makes no sense whatsoever. That's the reference, Katie, about the ladies' journal we talked about earlier, that those age-old journals still, they have such a long lag time. We still carry that around. The houses that we now sell, house plans we sell online, they're exactly the same as 100 years ago in these ladies' journals or whatever they were called, that you shared some of it, Katie, earlier, that are just so like, what age is this? This is like, what kind of dusted old history books is it? It makes no sense in today's parlance, ideas, understanding of the world whatsoever. And we still, but the house plans we sell haven't changed a bit.
I think that's what I really appreciated about your book, in that reading a summary of it, that you go back to the structure of a home, you go back to the essential elements, and you talk about that structure briefly, about how you're connecting to your home, and your home is how you connect, or you're also connecting with the outside world in ways. I just wanted to note Janine, that she felt like if she actually waited until she felt like she started a business, she never would have started. So sometimes we have to dive in, not knowing if we're ready. But the same is true for people starting to build a house. They don't want to dive in until they know what they're getting into. And I like that you're trying to outline that to help them imagine the full process, both in your website, through the series. You have the simple steps all the way to moving into the house, starting with the plan, talk to the architect, and then getting property. And you do a nice job of outlining that. How has this study into writing the book really enhanced your process and changed conversations? Ideally, people are going to come to you with this different mindset.
Yeah, exactly. So as you're sort of, it's good to hear you describing, you talked about the structure or certain straightforward elements in architecture that we use that our clients have never heard about, have no understanding. We talk to ourselves as architects. We build our websites for each other. Yet our clients, they look at us with big eyes and they go, so tell me, how does this work? What is the first step? What do we do? What do I have to add? All of these questions. And so I've been trying to provide that to them, to filter everything that I want to do in terms that they want to hear, need to hear, answer their questions. And
sounds like you're learning to do architecture again.
Yeah, 100%. Totally. And better for it, right? Because suddenly I'm listening to my audience, right? I mean, you know, together you create this and you get to meet together and see this thing develop. And so, yeah, I mean, the conversations have changed. The way we talk to each other has changed. My clients come to me now and they trust me. In fact, this entire process that you sort of outlined there is meant to or give those the opportunity to walk away, they need to walk away. They're really just not a good fit. But for those that say, oh, Toby, that's what I want you to do, what I want to see, we get to talk. And so they, so now they come to me and they trust me. They want me to guide them through the process, listen to them. But so there's already that. They walk in the door and they say, I already know you two, and I've never met him before. That's the craziest, actually, part about the video series, where people come up to me, hey, Toby, I want to talk to you. Like, I'm going through my brain, okay, who's this? Have I talked to them before? What is it? Trying to, you know, Google who, I don't know. Then they tell me, oh, I saw you on the video online. It's like, okay. And they tell me all their darkest and deepest secrets, you know. So it has really helped, all of that. And you're right, the architecture has changed. I work differently now. I'm unbridled. I get to, they look at me, and we established up front a lot of stuff, the entire sort of laundry list of their wishes and ideas and square feet and price. All of that is important stuff. We talk about the technical parts and all of that. But then now that I know that I have already talked to them so much in all of this process, they know where I'm coming from, what I'm talking about, how I can enrich their lives, that I now don't hold back, but instead get to just sort of do it and do it right and expect that I will knock their socks off. And I have to do even better because I already promised all of that. And so it's changing what I do.
Is any of that change in practice a change from practicing in Germany and then practicing in America? Christian had a great question about how is it different? Other than the metric system. And then he also wanted to know if Germans are more blissful than Americans.
He's going to get me in trouble.
I'm sure that's in his intent, yes.
Well, people, so yes, I worked in Germany. I started there. I had a lot of culture shocks going back and forth over the years. Has been many years. And it turns out people are the same everywhere. Same problems, same concerns, same things. But some things are, of course, different. As far as the bliss is concerned, Germans are not necessarily known for having the greatest lifestyle. I don't know. Italians might be more top of the list. But in Europe, a lot of these things kind of float over the borders. And so there is more of a sense of enjoying what you do that people want here just the same. I think it's sometimes easier to get to over there than here. And I had to write a book here. Just kidding. No, but so it's really very similar. The practice is different. They spend way more money in Germany. When I walk over there, I'm just sort of flabbergasted at seeing the quality of construction. It's just phenomenal. And I don't understand who pays for it, whether it's private or public endeavors. It's just nuts. And yeah, it's way different here. And so, I mean, as part of what I'm trying to express in the book is that to spend the money on the right quality, the qualities that matter. We had a mastermind group earlier today here, part of this network. And Jack Barnes, one of the architects there, he told a great story visiting Venice, eating a meal at a restaurant. And they were only, sorry, Jack, if I'm telling your story wrong, but if you're listening in, but how they had one, the cook essentially told the guests what's being served today and what wine gets paired with what food. And the moment he sort of piped up and said, well, I don't want to have the whatevers with the whatevers, he was basically, no, that's not how it works here. We tell you what to cook. And he says, well, that was one of my best meals I've ever had, right? I can still remember what it was like. And there was an expert telling Jeff, don't tell me what to cook and what to pair it with. I'm telling you, and you're going to walk away with bliss and happiness. And so architects should do the same thing.
That's interesting. Sorry, Jeff, I have one more question that ties this. Yeah. That idea that American walks in and has that comment, you use the word supersize in your title, which all I can think is that documentary Supersize Me and McDonald's. Yeah. And like, we always want it bigger and better. And yet you're almost misleading people reading your book, because you're talking about supersized bliss, but it's not going to be a supersized home necessarily.
Yes, exactly right. So maybe that came. I had one prospective client talking to me who said, hey, I have this chunk of money. Here's all of these things I want to do. And I said, and so I said, okay, what you're listing up here is about 8,000 square feet. That'll cost you four times as much as you have. Now, if you want to get a house for what you can pay for, it's going to be around 3,000 square feet. And he looks at me and says, Toby, you want me to live in a tiny home? And I was thinking, 3,000 square feet for two people? That's not a tiny home. So yeah, if you're talking about supersizing something, then, you know, supersize the right thing.
I love that approach. I love the twist, as you know. And, you know, one of the things that strikes me is that as you were talking, I was trying to remember who I heard say this. I'm pretty sure it was on some sort of social media. It might have been Chris Doe, who I bring up quite a bit. But the gist of the conversation was essentially the more you talk with and listen to, you know, and for this audience, it would be clients, the people that you serve, however you want to say that, the more time you spend with them, the better you're going to be at what you do, the more satisfied they're going to be, and the more they're going to trust you. And that's one of the things that you said earlier. And it doesn't surprise me at all, right? Because you spent all of this time just sort of absorbing what these clients are saying and then really focusing on presenting this information back to them in their language, you know, so that they understand it. And it doesn't surprise me at all that it's driving a lot of trust and recognition. You know, hey, Toby, so you've got to be careful. You may want to start wearing a disguise when you're out in public. But I think that's something that we can all learn from, you know, whether you're starting your own thing or maybe you've been at it for 10 or 12 years or whatever it is. The more we listen to these people that we serve, the better everything is going to be.
I agree 100%. I mean, that's I think it's also a lot of the core of the Entree Architect sort of community's mantra, if you will, if there is one. At least a lot of what I've learned is sort of around that. And so, yeah, totally agree with that. And I mean, so I see it in front of me. I see the change in the conversations I have and the work I do. It's incredible.
John Jones says he's definitely going to have to buy the book. So if you're like John, go to supersizingbliss.com. What's one of your favorite stories or favorite pieces of advice in the book?
Well, one personal story is that I don't know if I can tell this story that well in person, but so when we design our home here, we have three daughters and they're sort of 2 years apart and love each other most of the time. And so we designed a house where their rooms, they have three rooms, each one of their own room. They're 12 by 15 feet, kind of standard, but we arranged them in sort of this flower petal kind of pattern where each room sticks out from the other one. And so each room has windows on three sides, and these windows are from floor to ceiling. And otherwise, it's just a boring room. But for each of them, but they all meet at the center of this flower with three doors all next to each other. And so what happens is that they get to be aware of their sisters next to each other. And the windows are arranged in a way that you can't really look into the room. You just see sort of the edge, the corner of a room. And so you see the light go on and turn off. You see the shadow of the other sister there. And you're always aware of them, but you have your own privacy. And so I'm sharing the book is how we get to be together as a family. We get to, you know, share meal. They have great conversations and they get to hate each other for a moment, right? Like sisters do. Storm up, slam the door, eye in the room, but it can only last that long before, you know, the apology. The light turns on, you know, the sister's there. You don't hate me that much, right? It's there. And I really think that it has changed the way they live together over the last, has influenced their relationship. Of course, you know, I can't sort of say, well, architecture has that big of an influence that, you know, solves all sins. But I do think that it had a positive and a very specific influence of how they grow up, how we live as a family, and how we sort of think of each other. So that's just one story of, I don't know, what, 24 chapters or something.
I love it. I also have three daughters, and two of them share a room right now, but the four-year-old mm-hmm. keeps trying to crawl into the bunk bed of the six-year-old. And she's like, no, I need my own space.
Uh-huh.
And so it's great to see how that's celebrated in the design. I am curious what your opinions are on spaces with a dedicated purpose versus multi-use space. Because that seems to be a new, like, big floor plan open, and that's a terrible simplification of the conversation. But how do you approach the dedication of space versus the multitude of uses in a space?
That's a great question. So to your point, I think that sort of free floor plans are being thrown around without much thinking, essentially the same floor plan from the Ladies Journal magazine, except you just take the walls out, but nothing changed. And another problem is that people talk about sort of flexible space by having movable elements. People don't move things. People don't have their desk fold down and then clear it up and then fold it back in. Doesn't happen. And so the question is, well, how do you do that? Also, to my point earlier, how our living arrangements are so varied and change, you know, constant flux. Can a house adjust to those needs, whatever it might be? And so I think the trick is the short of it might be, to put it that way, is don't talk about floor plans, don't talk about walls, lines on the drawing, talk about spaces. And so even the most free and open floor plan should have space, should be made up of different spaces that have different qualities to it. And so I talk in the book about sort of some key qualities with which we get to design the houses we live in or create architecture and that we have to our disposal. We can use these elements to create different feelings, different senses, different spaces. And so we know all of that language, right? I mean, so harshly said, but to make a point, like a prison cell feels like a prison cell because of what it is, right? The grandeur of a cathedral imbues us with a certain sense and has a certain effect. We can come to the design of our houses in the same way. And if you take an open floor plan, have niches, have areas, have places that are just feel different just because of this, how we create the space within a flowing floor plan. So I think that's the basis of the trick. So like in our house, for instance, it's all one open floor plan, if you will, downstairs. But it changes, like the privacy changes just because of our range, where at the beginning it's wide open. And the further you go, the more private it gets, even though it's really one open floor plan, if you will. And so you have an ability to shut off, to have a moment for yourself, have a moment with two people, have a moment with four people, have a moment with your spouse, with your kid, with your grandparent, where every time it's a different kind of atmosphere situation that has to have a different space and a different way we get together. And so if a space is able to do that, where I have our kitchen dining room table right here because it's the five of us, but 10 years from now it's over there and smaller because it's two of us and something else happens over here. If a house is able, if a building is able to provide spaces with different qualities, then I think it's a recipe for success. I'm thinking a little bit like the shared office spaces. They work really hard on doing that, where they have constantly changing clients with different needs. And so all of the spaces within shared office spaces often have sort of these different qualities so that you can address different people at different times with different options.
You flowed right into Mark's question about how this same mentality of design can be applied to other spaces that architects design, including work. But I think, Mark, also that work is now included in the home.
Yeah.
Plays into
definitely. Well, I think the basic to my book, it is about single family homes, but the basics is ask yourself what you want out of your building and out of your house. Forget all about what you think you've learned so far and start with this clean slate. Forget the market forces. Understand it's art that you're asking for, and then dive in and trust the process. And so that can be applied to any space, whatever it might be. When you ask these questions, this is the same questions again, not to make this an infomercial for Entree Architect, but that's the same question the network asks of us as professionals to do for our business. Ask the same question. Don't take the status quo, but look at what you're doing, what you want out of it, what your vision is, what you're dreaming of, and then make everything work towards that goal and start from scratch. And don't just sort of result to the bottom drawer. Okay, we got a plan for that. Here it is. Next one. No good comes from that.
Do you have good ways to keep that goal present throughout the design process?
I literally, part of the book came, so there's four parts in the book where I speak specifically more sort of architectural stuff, which I talk about structure, I talk about light and shadow, talk about space, and then I talk about texture. Those four things are literally, I have essentially a running document for each project. And it has a baseline that has developed over the years that is sort of at the beginning that I just trying to remember things that I need to communicate, things, steps we have to go through, all of that. On the very top were those four pieces that I had put there for me to remember, never to forget, whatever weeds we get lost into, that I can always find my way back to daylight and look at that and go, all I need to do is create, you know, look at the structure and make it meaningful and sort of really sexy so that the space really benefits from it and how we live in it and how we feel in it. Same with this, just the quality of the space. I bring up Maya Lin's Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C. Gives me goosebumps every time I'm there. I have no relationship to that wall whatsoever. I walk down there and I want to lay down and bawl and cry. It's just a physical space. So I talk about that. I talk about the texture. Brick walls ought to be inside. They bring such richness to a living environment. And the light and shadow. I talk about it all in the book. I talk about that to my clients all the time. It's front and center, and I keep it there, keep it my mantra, so that when I concentrate on that, only good can come out of it. And it's for the benefit of my clients. Even if they come to me and talk about square feet, I get to say, no, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about your happiness, and here's some ways how we can sort of get there quickly.
I like that. And so Mark asked another question that's, you know, I've been trying to figure out how to wrap Not So Big House into this conversation. So Mark asked, what can we do to take your message from the book and make it a consumer movement, like Not So Big House was or is, the Not So Big House type of movement? So homeowners know that there is a better, healthier, happier way.
We all feel so small compared to the big builders. At least I do. They seem to have so much of the market right now and so much capacity to convince people they're the right option. So how do we show this alternative?
I got 300 million copies of my book upstairs. If American reads it, we're good to go.
All right, John Jones, you can order in bulk.
That's right. But this might not be quite an answer, but in lieu of an answer, this morning I was thinking, you know what we need? We need construction loans. We need design loans so that people can actually finance architects, designers properly upfront for the entire time that it takes to design a house, so that that the value is recognized by banks the same way that they do it for the actual construction, so that we no longer talk about what banks want to talk about, what ginormous builder or developers talk about, but talk about actually what the consumers of homes, what we actually desire. And what we need for that is architects, designers that do their job well, and we need to be able to pay them well and right so that they have the time and capacity to answer those questions, give to their clients what they need to give. And if we had, I don't know, design loans in some fashion, maybe that would do the trick.
You hit a tone there. That's resonating.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. And I've thought that for a long time. It's if we want to argue that architects should be designing homes, the big gap, right, is that, you know, it doesn't matter if your client wants to build a $300,000 or $3 million home. If their budget is 300 or it's 3 million, you still are tacking on what some percentage on top of that. You know, if you're doing a percent of construction type contract, they can finance everything essentially, except for what you're tacking onto it. And that's that in this rampant consumerism environment that we're in, that's a really hard thing for consumers to swallow and to come up, oh, I've got to come up with an extra, you know, if it's 10%, I've got to come up with an extra $300,000 for my home, just because I want an architect to design it. I'm not devaluing architects or their fees. It's just, that's a huge problem, right? That's a huge gap right there. I think you're exactly right. There needs to be some sort of financial mechanism. I don't know what that looks like, but you know, maybe one of my students will do that as one of in the grad class as a concept of what would it be? It'd be like a Fin design Fin type project.
Yeah,
come up with an idea for that.
That would be fantastic. I mean, come to think of it, the it's painful to see when I have clients who turn around for personal reasons and sell the house, and it gets that I design and spend 2 years sort of helping them create, you know, come to fruition, and they sell it for an enormous upcharge of the actual costs. It was already expensive per square foot for the, as far as banks are concerned, to make it happen. The moment they turn around and sell it, there's a line out down the road, and everybody's happy to buy that, you know, outbid each other. And that actually is the value that we as architects just brought in. And so for a bank should be able to say, okay, I gladly pay for that, because that means that my investment into this house is going to be more than secure, because everybody would want that. And by the time it sells for a multiple. Should be easy.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's repositioning value somehow. There will have to be a tipping point, obviously, to drive that. But I think you're really onto something there.
And hopefully less insurance claims because of proper detailing and observation during construction. Yeah,
exactly. 100%.
Yeah, we're cracking the nut on something here. That's good. Solve some problems here. Well, I know we're almost to the top of the hour here. This has been, first of all, thank you to everyone for coming back on a new day and new time, new look, new co-host, new everything here. So appreciate everybody showing up at for this reboot of Context and Clarity Live. And Toby, of course, congratulations on Supersizing Bliss. Congrats on publishing the book. And thank you for sharing the stories and also the impact of it.
Well, what do you think? Did you hear something in this conversation that you can use, maybe in your practice or even in your life? If the topic of this conversation is of particular interest to you, every week in the Entree Architect Network, I host the Context and Clarity Classroom. It's our weekly opportunity to take what we've learned from our special guests and put those lessons into action in your life and in your work. Find the Context and Clarity Classroom exclusively inside the Entree Architect Network at network.entrearchitect.com. And if you are so inspired by this conversation that you'd like to watch the entire Context and Clarity Live episode, head on over to YouTube. Find the Entree Architect YouTube channel. There's a playlist there that has all of the full Context and Clarity Live episodes. You can also have the Context and Clarity podcast delivered to you every week. Just give us a rating and subscribe wherever you're listening right now. Your likes and your ratings and your shares all help us help other entrepreneur architects like you. And together, they help us build the largest worldwide community of small firm architects. And if you love content like this, check out Gable Media. It's a multimedia network for people that care about the built environment. And it's the home of Context and Clarity. With Gable's growing family of podcasts and video channels, I know that you're going to find something there that interests you. You can learn more at GableMedia.com. That's GableMedia.com. So thanks for listening. I hope this conversation has inspired you to think about how you can build your business into something that allows you to practice the way that you want to practice.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And Brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but Brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with Brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.